Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Good morning and welcome to the Liverpool.com podcast on the Blood Red channel. I'm James Martin and joined by Matt Addison, who from the piece I just edited seems like he's just enjoyed a nice little jaunt over in Hungary watching Dominik Szoboszlai. How was your break, Matt?
Yes, as I'm sure hasn't gone unnoticed on our rota, I do tend to take a few days off during every international break and managed to get across to Budapest for the last few days. That's been really, really nice, and obviously got to see Dominik Szoboszlai as well. I was there in the mix zone afterwards, but he was only allowed to speak in Hungarian rather than English, so that didn't make it particularly easy for me to get any quotes off him. But yeah, it was really interesting to see it. And as people will be able to read on our website, a piece that I've written about sort of basically how unexpected it was to me. I knew he was big. I knew he was kind of the superstar in Hungary. But yeah, the extent to which everything in Hungary is about Dominik Szoboszlai took me a little bit by surprise, I have to say. So yeah, it was really good to get over there. Nice to have a little break, and I managed to take in a new stadium, really nice stadium as well, the Puskas Arena. So yeah, it was a good few days, but obviously looking forward now to the rest of this season and getting back to seeing Szoboszlai in a Liverpool shirt instead.
Absolutely, a well-earned break for sure, and a good piece as well, well worth the read. That's going up at 12 o'clock, so be sure to check that out. But yes, as you say, diving into what's left of the Liverpool season, and then looking a bit further beyond today as well, actually, because we're going to focus on the summer, of course. Lots that is still to happen between now and then, lots of very important things that are still to happen between now and then. But Richard Hughes is obviously appointed now. He'll be joining from Bournemouth officially come the end of his contract there, so end of the season. Obviously, Michael Edwards is in place as the CEO of football for FSG rather than specifically Liverpool. So the pieces are beginning to fall into place. And of course, the big thing is the new manager, which we might touch upon a little bit. But once that's in place, there's still the normal stuff to sort out, isn't there? There's contracts and there's transfers. So yeah, I mean, let's look at transfers. It's funny now, isn't it, when you look back at last season when we're talking about the scale of the rebuild and how it was such a big kind of rebuilding season. And then you fast forward a year and you know, Klopp's on his way out, Michael Edwards is back. This seems to be the real rebuild. But do you think, on a transfer front at least, it'll be a bit of a quieter one?
I would suspect so. I think I've thought that really for a while, that Liverpool don't really have any obvious positions that you'd look at and think that they need to strengthen. Obviously, Matip is coming to the end of his contract. I think we have to assume that he will probably leave rather than get a new one. There's obviously other players as well. I mean, Thiago is in a similar situation. So I think that there's a couple of positions that you'd think it would be nice for Liverpool to strengthen, but it's not like last season where you knew that they probably needed two or three midfielders. Then we had a couple of surprises. They end up needing four midfielders. It's not going to be quite like that, I don't think. And the fact that Michael Edwards, Richard Hughes, a new manager, Jurgen Klopp leaving, the fact that there's a bit more turmoil off the pitch this time rather than on the pitch, I think it just makes a lot more sense for it to be a slightly quieter summer. Now, obviously, we wouldn't be doing this podcast if I thought that Liverpool weren't going to sign anybody and that was the best thing for them, not to sign anybody. The kind of purpose of the next half an hour or so is to have a think about what Liverpool might do and what positions they might need to look at strengthening and, you know, various other bits around the squad. But I don't think it'll be quite so wholesale. I think it's probably more sensible to do one or two positions when a new manager comes in. They're going to want to change things up a little bit. I think it makes sense to do at least one each summer just to, you know, continually refresh and make sure that you're not leaving too much to one summer as they did last year. I think it makes sense also in the sense of if you're changing a manager, you don't want things to be completely different and, you know, completely do a U-turn in terms of what they're doing. What they're doing is clearly working. So continue with that. Don't do too much in one go. I think they probably did leave themselves with too much last summer. It worked. They got away with it. Obviously, they got away with it in terms of this season. Less so last season when they dropped out of the Champions League. But purely in terms of from last season onwards, it kind of worked. But that isn't always going to be the case. So I think you'd like to see as few changes as possible. But that's not to say that there won't be a couple of signings, because I suspect that there probably will be.
Yeah, I think that's an important point in terms of getting things done at the right time, not leaving things too late and sort of making sure you're refreshing rather than rebuilding, I think is probably the key. And for me, when I'm looking at the squad now, I think you have to look at the defence in terms of where do we need to buy now to make sure we're not in this situation we were in with the midfield again in another couple of years. I don't think it's imminent, but you look at Van Dijk, you don't want to be replacing Van Dijk because he's been the best defender in the league again this season, possibly the best in the world. He's certainly up in those conversations again. Those are the levels he's reached. But the way Liverpool has operated at its best is kind of getting those replacements in ahead of time to sort of learn the craft and maybe get minutes here and there and eventually take over in a more kind of gradual, studied way. So you sort of look at the squad and think, do we already have Van Dijk's successor? We might do. Obviously, there's Konate. Jarrell Kwanzaa has had an excellent season. Joe Gomez is still, what, 26, 27? He's not old anyway, which is remarkable considering he's the only player to have served through the entire Klopp era. But yeah, it's one of them where there are players there, but I'd want to be thinking about it, I think. And then you have the same situation at left back, where you have Andy Robertson, who's, you know, 30. You have Kostas Tsimikas, who's only a little bit younger, I think 27, 28. So he's not going to be the long-term heir to Robertson. You know, maybe he has another couple of years when Robertson does move on. But that's maybe the position where you think two, three seasons down the line, we don't want to be looking at it where that is still the first choice back line. And maybe that this is the summer where you start at least the recruitment process for that. Are there any names that kind of jump out to you from a defensive sense, or do you think you'd be focusing recruitment elsewhere?
I think left-sided centre-back and left-back is probably the thing that I would look at, similar to you, really, in terms of the obvious starting point for where Liverpool need to look at. But I wouldn't necessarily think that that was two players. I think that's probably one. I think that is what Liverpool looked at last summer. They obviously looked at Levi Colwill and weren't able to get him. I think the problem last summer, and probably for me this summer, is that there wasn't anybody that they thought was clearly perfect or good enough or available at the right price. I know there was links to a couple of different players. There's, you know, Gonzalo Inacio, for example, obviously, you know, somebody that is very highly rated from what I've seen of him and from what you read about him. People do seem to think that he has got that ceiling and he's got that next level to be able to jump to if he was to move to, you know, a bigger club, if he was to come across to England and the Premier League. But clearly Liverpool didn't think that that was the case last summer, otherwise they would have done it then. So I think that the difficulty really in terms of the position is that there's not loads of outstanding players. That makes it all the more important that Liverpool, if there is one that pops up and becomes available on the market, it's even more important that Liverpool do it, because as you say, if you wait a year or two, it's not necessarily going to be the case that there's somebody else obvious that jumps out on the market then. So if there is somebody that they can go and do this summer in that position, I think they will do that. The question for me really is who is that person? I don't really have an outstanding name. I think there's probably five or six that you could pick out across the continent that you'd think, you know, maybe they would, you know, tick the majority of the boxes. I think there's probably, given that Matip is going to be leaving, I think there's a necessity to pick somebody, even if it's not the perfect option. I don't think it's one where Liverpool can lose a centre-back and not bring somebody else in, as well as Jarrell Kwanzaa has done. We know that the injury record of Konate isn't perfect. Van Dijk is going to be 33, I think, in the summer. So there's definitely a need to do something. You know, that's up to Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes and whoever else is involved in that process to find out that name. For me, there's no obvious candidate at this point, unless somebody like, say, Colwill suddenly became available because the situation at Chelsea changed and they needed to get money in. You know, maybe there's something like that that could happen. For me, though, right now, I think it's definitely a left-sided centre-back / left-back that Liverpool need. Who that is, I think,
is a much more tricky question to answer.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, and as you say, that is the job of Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes. We are talking about their role in the summer today, so I'm going to take us on a brief detour away from the specifics of the playing squad, because you mentioned Inacio there, and then another one of those names maybe in your five or six might be Pierre Hincapié. We've seen links to him crop up. And what's interesting there is, of course, Inacio is at Sporting, Hincapié is at Bayer Leverkusen. So you look at that, and then you look at the managers of those respective clubs being Ruben Amorim and Xabi Alonso. But then you look at Edwards and Hughes, and you look at what sort of tempted Edwards back into the fold, and you're thinking, you know, Klopp's been here for 9 years. His influence is naturally built up behind the scenes. With a new manager, we can safely assume they're going to have less influence on recruitment. But do you think that the identity of the new manager is still going to be an important factor for Hughes and Edwards in sort of determining who they want to buy?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say, isn't it? I think they will clearly be led by the data in terms of who it is, but it is clearly an advantage at the same time. If Xabi Alonso knows Piero Hincapié, for example, if that makes sense to bring in a player like that, I don't think Liverpool would do it purely on that basis, but it's probably not a bad thing that he's got somebody who can, you know, transition across and be able to pass on to the other players exactly how it was that, you know, Alonso did things at Leverkusen. And I think there is almost a bit of a transitional aspect in terms of that you could potentially see as a little bit of an edge, but I don't think that'll be, you know, something that they think about primarily. It's got to be the right player, hasn't it? I mean, Hincapié is interesting. I don't know really in the last sort of couple of months, but certainly at the start of the season, he wasn't in Xabi Alonso's first choice team this season. He was on the bench for a lot of the first half of this season. Now, clearly he's still a very young player. He's still, you know, got a lot to offer. He's clearly very highly rated and very talented. But I think that's an interesting element to it as well, that, you know, just because Alonso came doesn't mean that Hincapié would come as well for both of those reasons, really. He wasn't clearly the first option on the left side of the Leverkusen defence. As I say, that may have changed. Now, I can't say honestly that I've watched every single Leverkusen game this season, so I don't know. But I think there's a lot more nuance to it in terms of who Liverpool would look at than just, well, they're going to get the Sporting manager or the Leverkusen manager, whoever it might be, that they'll go for players in that group. I'm sure that won't stop the transfer stories of Xabi Alonso raiding his former club and things like that, just as, you know, Jurgen Klopp was linked with so many Dortmund players when he first came over to Liverpool. But I don't think that would be a disadvantage, certainly. It would definitely be a good thing if there was a little bit of a transition with the players as well as the manager. But I think if I was going to pick any Leverkusen player, it would probably not be Hincapié, it would probably be Florian Wirtz.
Yes, who we will come to in greater detail shortly. I think you're right. It's that case of striking a balance. It's not going to be the new manager walks through the door and says, I want X player, Y player, and in they come. But I do wonder whether, in terms of prioritising the summer, maybe Hughes and Edwards are going to want a pretty good idea, at least, of who the manager is going to be before they decide who they're going to sign, in just in terms of what style they might want to play. And like you say, being led by the data in that respect, in terms of who would be a good fit for, I don't really know what to call it anymore. I was going to say Liverpool 2.0, but Klopp's kind of nicked that for this season. So maybe Liverpool 2.1. But the next version of this team anyway. But yeah, it's an interesting one. And so the defence, I think we agree, is probably the main priority. But as you say, you've got your eye on Florian Wirtz as a kind of sprinkling of star quality a bit further forward. Just talk me through that. What's the thinking? Where do you think he fits in? Is he filling a gap, or is he one of those that's just that good that he should be a Liverpool player?
A little bit of both, really. I think he's clearly a huge talent. I love watching him. I loved the goal he scored after 7 seconds for Germany during the international break. I just think he's an unbelievably good footballer. He reminds me a lot of Coutinho, who's one of my favourite Liverpool players, purely to watch, obviously. We all know how that ended and what has happened to him since. But just in terms of aesthetically, the way that he plays football, I just think he's an absolute joy to watch. I think he's an unbelievably good footballer, still so young. I think he's definitely the next one at Leverkusen who should get a move somewhere else. I know I can't remember whether it's his agent or his dad or maybe both that have spoken about, you know, maybe not being in such a rush to leave Leverkusen. They might do another season. They're, you know, very carefully going to plan this out. I know he's had a big injury in the past, but he seems to have got over that. So I think there's definitely an expectation in my mind that he will move somewhere in the summer, and I'd very much like that to be Liverpool. So it's a bit of an opportunistic one in that sense. But I just think in terms of Liverpool's squad as well, he feels to me like one that would, if Liverpool are going to play with this kind of system that they've got now with, you know, advanced midfielders like Jones or Szoboszlai, it feels like Florian Wirtz could play in one of those roles. He could also do a little bit in the forward line as well, which I know people will look at that and think that Liverpool have got, you know, 5 senior attackers as it stands. Obviously, they've got to sort out a contract with Salah. There's been, you know, quotes from Luis Diaz's dad about him fancying a move to Spain in the last couple of days. There's a couple of questions in the forward line, but I just think you can never have too many good attackers. I think Liverpool need, considering, you know, the Champions League next season is expanded, there's going to be more matches. The matches that Liverpool play are going to be, you know, a lot more difficult. You know, this season they've had a lot of injuries. They've had, you know, forwards, Diogo Jota is in any season really prone to picking up injuries, but I just think you can never have too many. You can never have too many options. And when Liverpool are going to have a much trickier season, I think, next season in terms of, you know, what happens in terms of the Champions League, the matches that they're going to play, that they're not going to be able to make 11 changes against Toulouse, for example, as they did this season. Or, you know, with all due respect to the opponents that they're playing in the Europa League, even from this position, you know, they may end up playing Benfica in a semi-final, for example, but Benfica could be your easiest group match next season, quite feasibly, because of, you know, the quality of the opposition. So there's so many matches these days that the quality that Liverpool are going to need next season is going to be stepped up a notch. And for me, Florian Wirtz is a player that could play, well, he could play quite easily at the top level for the next decade, but he could also play in a couple of different positions for Liverpool. It would just, as you said at the start, add a lot of star quality really to what Liverpool already have. And I think it feels to me, if Leverkusen win the league, it makes sense for Xabi Alonso to make the next step. It probably makes sense in the same way for Wirtz, Hincapié, maybe one or two of the other, you know, star players in this Leverkusen team. It's probably not going to get any better at Leverkusen. It might be the right time to make that next step. And if he does move, I think, you know, it's going to be one of the big clubs. It'll be a Liverpool, a City, a Real Madrid. I'd very much like Liverpool to be in that conversation.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think you make a good point about the need for quality depth sort of stepping up next season. Not only are Liverpool back in the Champions League, but of course they're back in an expanded Champions League. Make of that what you will. Personally, can't say I'm a huge fan, but we'll see how it goes. But you know, the bottom line is it's more fixtures and more important than ever to have that kind of deep squad. I mean, for me, that probably puts me in the kind of place where I'm not necessarily looking at any kind of marquee sales. I mean, you look at a couple of players who maybe under different circumstances, if a bid came in, maybe Liverpool would be looking at it. But do you think sort of the combination of the depth that's going to be needed and the fact that there's already quite a lot of upheaval means that maybe Hughes and Edwards are going to be looking at it? Looking at players, I mean, you mentioned Diaz, who's sort of been semi kind of eyeing up a move through his dad to one of the Spanish giants. You look even at Gakpo, who's come in for some flack in recent times. I mean, I wouldn't be selling them. I don't imagine you would be selling them. But would you sort of agree with that assessment that with all the change to those players who maybe might have been for sale at the right price are now more or less locked down?
Yeah, I mean, you can't rule anything out in terms of, you know, potential sale for somebody that is maybe a surprise after what happened last summer. I don't think any of us expected Jordan Henderson to go to Saudi Arabia, for example. We know how that has turned out, and I don't think that the Saudi project will be quite so appealing to Liverpool players this summer. I think there was probably a few that were looking at it to think, you know, maybe that might be something for the future. Maybe they might have changed their minds on that, or maybe delayed it a little bit further than what they might have done originally. So I think there's definitely factors that will come into it, but I think you're right to say that Liverpool don't want to add too many unnecessary things to already fairly lengthy to-do list. I think if you could get one or two players in and you could tie down Van Dijk, Trent and Mohamed Salah for at least a couple of years in terms of the older players, obviously significantly longer than that with Trent as he enters his peak years, I think that would be pretty much the perfect summer really for Liverpool in terms of a transition. I don't think Liverpool can afford to lose Jurgen Klopp and one of the big hitters at the same time. Equally, when you're looking at the contracts in terms of Van Dijk and Salah, if you were to offer each of them, say, a two-year extension because of the age that they are, and you don't want to go beyond that too much. I think it was 3 years, wasn't it, for Salah last time. You know, maybe you could stretch to 3 years for each of them again. I think you don't want to be in a situation where maybe in the same way that you don't want to lose Klopp plus one this time, in 2 or 3 years' time, you don't want to lose, say, Van Dijk and Salah in the same summer. You want to kind of stagger that and make sure that those are at different times. So it's not just this summer that Liverpool have got to think about. They've got to think about the future as well. It feels like a tricky balance to get right, but I think you almost have to just do each thing step by step. The contracts, I think, have got to be the first thing, then maybe get one or two additions in. But I think as a base point, I would go into the summer not really thinking that Liverpool could afford to lose anybody big in terms of, you know, a Diaz or something like that. I don't think that would be something that Liverpool would look at, and I don't think that would be sensible either, because, as I say, it would just add something else for, you know, in what is going to be a summer of change. It would just add another thing. If I know that there's been a bit of a conversation around Diaz and Gakpo in terms of their output and the numbers, but to get somebody in who is going to produce more numbers is going to cost you a lot of money, and it's going to be very difficult. I don't think there's too many options out there that are better than those players. If there are, you know, it's a marginal difference. I think that the reality is for Liverpool this summer, the bigger picture is that there's a lot more stuff to do than thinking about that. Maybe that's one for next summer. If Luis Diaz is, you know, edging towards a move to Spain in 2025, for example, I think that's maybe a little bit more palatable than trying to do that this year as well.
Yeah, and you touched on the contracts there. They've sort of been lurking in the background of all of the discussion we've been having, really. I mean, even you look at someone like Wirtz and you think, if we're signing a star like that, does that mean Salah's on the move? And it's just everything at the club is sort of coloured by the uncertainty. Even from the defensive discussion we were having at the start, Van Dijk sort of triggered a bit of worry, didn't he? He's rode back on it, but, you know, when Klopp first left, he made those comments, which were maybe a bit taken out of context, a bit misconstrued, about how, you know, nobody knows what the future holds with all of this uncertainty. He's made some comments since, which very much sound like his head is at Liverpool for well into the future. So let's hope that's the case. But it is an awkward bracket, isn't it? I mean, you look at Trent, like you say, and it should be straightforward. Not in the sense that it'll be an easy deal to strike necessarily, because he can rightly demand a lot of money. Liverpool won't want to shatter the wage structure. We've been in this situation with Salah's last extension, so I'm not necessarily saying it'll be easy, but in terms of from Liverpool's perspective, that's one you want to get done and you can offer a long-term deal. But then, as you say, the other ones, it's kind of that area where, I mean, you look at Van Dijk, who I mentioned earlier, has been the best in the league. You look at Salah, he's certainly been up there again. They've still been two of Liverpool's most important players this season. So in terms of all of those factors, you look at it and you think, you know, they have to get renewals. But like you say, if you're looking at sort of longer than two-year extensions, you're sort of bringing them into, you know, 35, 36 kind of territory in terms of their ages. We know Michael Edwards has sort of in the past maybe been a little bit reluctant to hand out these longer contracts to older players. So that's another factor to throw in the mix. But I think you're right. In an ideal world, you give them 2 years and they're happy with that. But to sort of give you a tricky scenario, what if one of Van Dijk or Salah is saying, you know, I need 3 years, I need 4 years. what do Liverpool do then? Are they backed into a corner, or do they sort of make the concession because, as you say, we need to limit uncertainty and these are still very important players?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I suppose it depends on the finances, doesn't it? I don't know exactly what Virgil van Dijk earns at the moment, but I think there's a scenario where he could go to them and say, well, the last time I signed this contract, I wasn't Liverpool captain. I now am. I'm still, you know, proving that I am one of the best, if not the best in the world still. I think he's comfortably the best centre-back in the Premier League at the moment. There's no signs of that dropping off. There's plenty of examples, really, of players who played well into their 30s at centre-back. I think I would be more open to going longer with Van Dijk than Salah for that reason. I think you can see less of a drop-off with Van Dijk. And even if there was a slight drop-off, I think he'd still be, you know, right up there in terms of the very best. I think he offers a significant amount to Liverpool. I think the bigger problem would be depending on, Mohamed Salah's demands if he wants another pay rise and he wants another 3 years. I think that maybe gives you a bit of a quandary in terms of what you do. I think there's also a bit of a question mark over, you know, how much does he fancy Saudi Arabia at some point? And if Liverpool, for example, could give him 3 years, but basically between them, there was a bit of a handshake to say after 2 years, there's 100 million, you know, release clause if you want to go to Saudi Arabia at that point. Maybe there's something like that that you could talk about and put into a deal. It just depends really on a couple of different factors. If Virgil van Dijk was prepared to say, stay on the same wage that he is now, I think you'd then maybe, you know, more easily give him that 4 years. It depends on the variables, really. I think what we saw from the Mohamed Salah negotiation last time is that that's not necessarily going to be particularly easy for Liverpool to do. I think, again, he can probably point to his numbers this season. He's clearly still Liverpool's most important attacking player. Okay, he's missed, you know, a couple of months now with injury. I don't think that's necessarily a sign of he's suddenly now an injury-prone player. That may well have been a one-off, but I think there's, with both of them, a case to be made that they are still the best in their position in the world, certainly in the Premier League, certainly for Liverpool. I think that makes it a little bit tricky. And I can understand why, because Liverpool haven't had a sporting director and the structure, and they don't still have a manager in place for beyond Jurgen Klopp, but they haven't left themselves loads of time to do this. I think, you know, if you get down to the final summer, in the past, we've seen it with Wijnaldum, with Mane, with various players, that it tends to just be that, they're either sold or they wind down the contract and eventually go for free. I don't think Liverpool will want that to be the case with either of, well, all three of these players, obviously Trent as well, but, you know, with Van Dijk and with Salah, that won't be the case. But at the same time, it's a relatively small window, I think, to do what could be some pretty tricky negotiations in terms of these players.
Yeah, I don't envy Michael Edwards or Richard Hughes. I mean, just looking at the comments as well, someone says if we get Alonso, it's going to be three centre-backs. I mean, that's not a given, but it's certainly a possibility, given that we've seen him play three at the back with Leverkusen. If that's the case, that kind of changes transfer priorities, but it also changes the picture with Van Dijk, because as he points out, you know, the workload in a three is very different to the workload in a two. You referenced defenders who've gone on a long time. We can look at Thiago Silva, who, you know, up until quite recently was, you know, still going very strong, but again in a system which sort of highlighted his strengths and sort of hid away the growing weaknesses. So that there's so many uncertainties and so many variables that all of these decisions we've talked about kind of feed into one another, and it's just a case of where do you start, really. Once one thing happens, you get the sense that it's all going to fall into place. But as I said at the top, there's still 10 very important games to happen before we can really start focusing on it too much. I mean, even with the new manager as well, I mean, Alonso has some very important games to come, so we can't really be making any progress with him in this time either. Or the same applies for Amorim. You know, he's in a title race in Portugal. So you have to think it's just a case of patience, really. There's so much stuff to happen, but that kind of first domino isn't going to fall just yet. But we're getting closer with Richard Hughes in, with Michael Edwards in. And hopefully we'll know some more very, very soon. But thanks, Matt. It's been a good discussion. Enjoyed it. It's certainly going to be an interesting summer, and we'll keep you posted with all of the developments as and when we know them. for now. Thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to check out Liverpool.com for our content for the rest of the day, including Matt's Sobers Live piece in about half an hour. Plenty more on top of that as well. There's some more content on the Blood Red channel as well, so do have a watch of that. And we'll see you all very soon. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.